And we're holding on page Samach Gimel in Shabbos, about the middle of the page, Tanan Abban and Maisa B'chosid Echad. Middle of page Samach Gimel in Shabbos. Some middle, for those who are using other editions, it would be the middle of Oset Gimel. We talked yesterday about the concept, how important it is to be done with Kafschus. To judge another yid favorably. And by the way, there are dinim in that. I mean, the case we had yesterday involving the poil and the balabas and a couple of cases that we're going to have today are all that takes a little bit of a far-fetched explanation to say that the person is doing something right. So there are, in fact, the various rishonim and achronim talk about dinim in that. When you have somebody who's known to be an odom kosher, then yes, you have to bend over backwards to be done in the kav's chus, even if you see him doing something which seems on the face of it to be a blatant aveva. With the average person, you don't necessarily have to go that far, but and then you have somebody who's muchzik as a rasha, then you don't need to, but whatever, there are dinim in it. In these cases over here, we're talking about people who were known to be kshayim and tzaddikim, and therefore, even though what they're doing, it seems you need a very unusual explanation to account for what they're doing without it being an aveda, nevertheless, you're obligated to do that. Ben Yoyoder, by the way, points out an interesting thing. He says, you know, we had yesterday at the end of the story, and we're going to have in each of these two stories, where they say that to the same way as you judge me l'kapschus, Hashem should judge you l'kapschus. Ben Yoyoder asks, what do you need that for? A person needs to judge l'kapschus because you can never know another person's motivations. Hashem knows everybody's motivations anyway. Where is there room for being done l'kapschus? So he says, because the vort is, sometimes you can have, let's say, a person didn't do a mitzvah, but they would have done, they take the view, they would have done it if they would have done the opportunity, if they would have had the opportunity. So that's an example where Hashem can judge the Makaschus and judge that they taka would have done it if they had the opportunity and they just didn't because they didn't have that. Okay, so the Gemara says, turn it up on Maisa B'chosid Echon. About the middle of the page. Turn it up on Maisa B'chosid Echon. It happened once with a particular chosid, and Rashi points out, based on another Gemara, that whenever it says Maisa b'chosid echad, it means either Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. So this chosid was either Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was one of the chaverim of Rabbi Akiva. He's one of the Asar al-Rugim Malchus. Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi is the regular Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana in Shas, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Eliezer and later on of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, so it happened with him. Shepoder Riva Achas Bas Yisrael. He one time redeemed a Jewish girl from captivity. She had been captured or arrested or whatever by Goyim, and he arranged pidyon shvuyim for her. Then when it came, they're staying overnight in an inn on the way back to wherever he's going to take her. He shtiva tachas magaloisa. He had her sleep under the legs of his bed, so like fairly close to him, like in his room. Lamacha yara b'tavol v'shana l'tamidim. The next day, the chosid echad, whichever Rabbi Yehuda it was, went and toveled, and only then he started teaching his tamidim. Now, on the surface of it, it could seem like he had relations with that girl, and therefore now he's tamei tumas keri, and therefore now he needs to tovel before he can teach Torah. Technically, we learned in brachas, there is takonas Ezra. At one point, the chachamim made a takona that you can't daven or learn Torah without toveling. Later on, they were mevatel it because most people weren't able to be nizer in it. Nevertheless, chassidim ba'anshei ma'isa still would. But on the face of it, that's what it looked like. Primarily it means shmoneh esrei, right. But here we're talking about teaching, anyway. Omelahem, so now the chosid echad says to his talmidim, v'shar shei shaptir tachas ma'galoisai. When I had her sleep by the foot of my bed, b'mech hashad tuni, what did you suspect me of? Now, on one level, of course, Ben Yoyada points out, it's not like he thought they would suspect him, but he wanted to teach a lesson that other people who might be hearing what's going on, they could take a lesson from this, how to be done the kapslis. Also, of course, he has the opportunity, therefore, when they are done in the kapslis and they say how they were, he has the opportunity to give them the bracha that Hashem should also do the same for them. On another level, though, he explains with a number of these stories, when we say over here, b'mech hashad tuni, a lot of the details over here, b'mech hashad tuni, it also amounts to him saying, not just is there anything that you suspected me of, but the other way around, do you think that I was choshed in you, that I was choshed betrayed in, and therefore, like, do you think, for example, I had to keep her in my private room because I'm afraid that one of you might be mezana with her? So Amaru, so they answered, we said, Shema Yeshbon, a Talmud, Shainib, Boduk, Rebbe, there might be among us one particular Talmud who Rebbe hasn't thoroughly checked out. He doesn't know all his middos to be able to rely on to leave her with us and that there wouldn't be any problem. So in other words, they could say, for example, most of us, yes, we've been your Talmudim a long time. You know us, and of course you would never be choshed in us, but there's always newcomers among the Talmudim, and we thought it might have been like that. Next, he says, "B'shashi yaradti b'tavalti." When I went down and toiled, "B'mech hashad tuni." What do you suspect me of? Amalnu. So they answered. We said, "Shem ibn Torah haderach irakeri l'reb." Maybe because of the hardships of the road, it happened that you became a balkan. Sometimes it happens. The Gemara mentions, the Mishnah mentions in Zovim that the same thing can happen with a Zov, so the same thing can happen with Keri, that it can happen because of physical exertion, that can cause that to happen. So therefore, so not because there was any znus, but just not because there was even hero on her, but just because of the trouble of the journey. Omer Lahem, so he says, Ha'avoida, I swear by the Avoida, Kahoya, that's exactly what happened. The Atem Kashem Shedantuni Lakaf Schus, so just as you judge me favorably, I'm Mokim Yodin Eskam Lakaf Schus, so Hashem should judge you favorably in the future. Here's where Marshall points out, which I'd said this yesterday, but it actually belongs really over here, that this apparently was after the Churban. Whether the Chosid Echad is Rabbi Huda ben Bava, or whether it's Rabbi Huda ben Rabbi Loi, their careers took place after the Churban. So therefore, especially when they were old enough to have Talmidim of their own. So why is he swearing by the Avoida? So first of all, that may have been the normal way where they swore, even after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Or he says also that the word Avoida has the same nekudas as the name Yudke Vodke, as it's usually printed. And therefore, swearing Ha-Avoida is tantamount to swearing in Hashem's name. The Gemara continues. Tonon Abbonon. One time, the Talmid Chachamim needed a certain thing by a certain Roman noblewoman. All of the noblemen of Rome used to regularly visit her, and you can imagine they're not just visiting her for her good advice. Anyway, so now one time the Chachamim needed something from her. So they're asking among themselves who's going to go, who's going to take the chance of themselves of going into such a place of Tumah. So Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll go. So Rabbi Yeshua goes along accompanied by his Talmidim. When he came to the entrance of her house, he took off his tefillin 4 amas away from the door, the nichnas, and he went in, the nala delis b'fneim, and he locked the door behind him. And after he went out, yada v'tovel v'shana, the Talmudim, he went and tovelled, and only then taught Torah to his students. But Amalam, so he asked them, the shosha chalakti, now on the face of it, again, if it wasn't Rabbi Yeshua, if it was a regular person, we might suspect that what happened was he took off his tefillin, because you're not allowed to have tefillin on when you have relations. In those days, remember, they wore tefillin all day, but you're not allowed to have them on, and you're not even allowed to have them in the same room unless they're covered when you're having relations, and therefore, on the face of it, you might think if it wasn't Rabbi Yeshua, that that's what he did, and therefore, afterwards, he's tovelled. So he asked them, when I took off the tefillin, "Bamech hashad tuni, what do you suspect me of?" So they answered, "Amarnu kisover Rebbe al yukonsa divrei kedusha b'makom tuma." Rebbe, you must have figured it's not appropriate that the kedusha of tefillin should go into a place of tuma like this Roman lady's house. Isn't that a problem of yichud? So the Gemara doesn't deal with that. Well, the Gemara deals, 1 second, so b'shashana alti, b'mech hashad tuni, he asked, when I locked the door, what did you suspect me of? So they answered, amalnu shemet v'malchus yesh b'ena l'b'ena, there may be a kingly matter, a royal matter, or something that has to be kept in utmost secrecy, that you have to talk with her, and therefore you couldn't leave the door unlocked, because somebody might walk in. Now, you're asking, though, isn't there the problem of Yichud? So first of all, one thing, the Yichud with a Goite is also only Medrabanan. So one of the Mefroshim in the back of the Gemara, I think of Elazar Meir Horowitz, says it's possible that maybe that Zera wasn't made yet at the time, and therefore there's no Issur in it. But another possibility is that maybe Rabbi Yeshua judged that in this case it doesn't apply, for example, because it may have been a matter of almost Pikuach Nefesh. If they have to deal with this Roman lady, it wasn't Stam something. It must have been something very serious to require Rabbi Yeshua himself to go deal with her. So therefore, under the circumstances, he may have figured there's really no choice. Anyway, What about when I went and toivod, which on the face of it would take place only after a person became tomei with tumas keri, and now you couldn't use the answer as before with the chosid echad that it was repay torah chaderach because it wasn't that far a journey. So they answered, Amarnu shemen nitzra tzinora mipiha al god of shorebi. Maybe a drop of saliva where it flew out of her mouth and landed on Rebbe's clothing. The Chachamim made a gzera that all goyim are considered like zovim. Midaraisa goy is not matame at all, but midrabanan, the Chachamim made a takana that all male goyim are matame as zovim, and all female and all goytis are matame as zovos. Now an actual zov or zova, midaraisa, their saliva is tame. It's an avatruma, and if a person touches it or carries it on their clothing, then they and their clothing become tame. So here, midrabanan, when they're considered a zava, when she's considered a zava, then you have the same din. So they said, maybe what happened was, as she was talking with you, a drop of saliva from her landed on your clothing, and therefore was matame you, and therefore you had the toivod. You have similar things in a Nissen Gaon. The Gemara points out over here that you have other examples of that kind of thing in other places in Chas. You shouldn't think it's like a far-fetched possibility. You have several other examples, for example, the Gemara in Yuma, where it tells about a couple of brothers who one after another were koinim dolim, and each time where they ended up, they had to speak with a goyish king on or right before Yom Kippur, and again, a drop of saliva landed from the guy on their clothing, and they became tomei, and they couldn't do the avodah on Yom Kippur, and another brother had to sub for them. So it's a real positive. Amalahem, he says, Avoida, I swear by the Avoida, Tacholya, that's exactly what happened. And again, the Akim Kashem should Antoni Vaschus, just as you judge me favorably, Hamokim Yodineschem Vaschus, Hashem should judge you favorably. So in all these examples, you see the importance of being Don Makaf's Chus and how Hashem pays a person back for that. The Rif, by the way, discusses over here, the Rif at the bottom of the page over here discusses, so at the beginning we said, Hadonis Chaber L'Kafskos Donin Oysa L'Skos. It's a definite thing that Hashem will judge him favorably. In all these three stories, we see that the person is saying, just as you judge me favorably, Hashem should judge you favorably. That amounts to a tefillah that Hashem should do it. Where do we see from that in fact that's the way it happens? And he answers that it may not be in each of these cases a tefillah, it may be a havtocha, it may be a promise. Not Hashem should judge you l'kafskos, but Hashem will judge you l'kafskos. And how could these tzaddikim say that? They would have to be that they knew for a fact that that's how it is.
If someone does not l'kafskos on somebody else, does Hashem punish that person?
So not specifically punish, but we're saying Hashem won't necessarily judge that person with half schus. When you have something that, for example, to take the Ben Yehoyada's example, where you didn't do a mitzvah, and you might say with half schus on him that he would have done it if he had the opportunity, then not judging him with half schus would mean that Hashem might say, well, you know what, he didn't do it, so therefore he doesn't get the sky for it. But yeah, then the flip side, if he is done with half schus, then Hashem will treat him accordingly. Further on, the Perek goes on to discuss. Now, since at the beginning of the Perek, it talked about again where you have dinim, where you're allowed to move boxes of straw, grain, or whatever to make room for orchim or for a base of medrash. So then the Mishnah goes on to discuss what kinds of things are and aren't you allowed to move on Shabbos. It has to be something that has a use on Shabbos. So even though boxes of straw or grain, you're not normally going to use the grain or the straw, but you could conceivably use it on Shabbos. You could feed it to an animal or you could whatever. As opposed to, for example, the Mishnah describes, you have certain kinds of vegetables or beans or whatever, which are not normally animal food, and therefore those would be mukta on Shabbos and you can't move them. So then it goes on to discuss that you have different opinions of Tanoim that mention certain kinds of things that you can because some of them can be eaten by exotic animals. A person might have a certain kind of exotic animal as a pet, and therefore they need this kind of thing to feed them. One of them it mentions, for example, is that the Tanakama of a Braisa says you wouldn't be allowed to move broken glass on Shabbos, because what can you do with it? On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you could use it to feed to ostriches. Ostriches, like most birds, don't have teeth, but they have to digest their food. They have to break up and digest their food somehow. So what they commonly do is they'll eat hard things like little pebbles or things like that. Or here we're saying like not sharp shards of glass. Obviously, it would rip up their throats. But the pastor says we're talking about pieces of glass that are not quite so sharp. Where then it'll help grind up. It'll mix with the food in their gizzard and in their pupik and help digest it and help break it down, digest it. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, as long as a person has pet ostrich, so first the Gemara says maybe only if he has a pet ostrich, then the Gemara says not necessarily. Even if he doesn't have a pet ostrich, the fact that it is usable for that, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, therefore that would be enough. So now the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Virab Shimon, Virab Yishmael, Virab Akiva, Kulu Sviralahu Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Neim. They all hold that as a matter of halacha, the Jewish people are considered princes, and therefore, now everybody, now Maharsha points out, fine, you know, where the Torah says, Bonim Atim LaHashem Alekechem, there's no question, we are children of Hashem. But the point is, these four Tanoim are all saying that that actually has practical implications as far as halacha. So Rav Shimon Gamliel Hodam, and by the way, there is the usual rule that the Gaonim say that when the Gemara does that, when the Gemara lists a whole bunch of Tanoim that all hold the same thing, that is as much as to say that Halacha is not like them after all. Because we're saying, first of all, it means those Tanoim hold that, but implicitly all the other Tanoim disagree. And second of all, it means each of them said his particular din that derives from this point, but they wouldn't necessarily agree with each other's din. Rav Shimon Gamliel, for example, saying that you can move broken glass on Shabbos because you can use it to feed to ostriches, because Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachah Neim, the other Tanoim that we're mentioning over here would agree Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachah Neim, but they wouldn't necessarily agree with this particular application of that halacha. Anyway, so Rav Shimon Gamliel Hodam Moron, so we said the fact that he allows you to move broken glass on Shabbos, even if you're not rich enough to have pet ostriches, but you could be conceivably a yid, ought to be rich enough and ought to be princely enough to have pet ostriches, and therefore Rav Shimon Gamliel allows him to move broken glass on Shabbos. Rav Shimon, the Tanan, where do we see Rav Shimon holds of such a concept? We learn Uliu in the Masechta. You have a Mishnah that says, Neimalu. Now, Uliu, we talked about the point that you're not allowed to do various kinds of medicinal things on Shabbos. You're allowed to, for example, eat and drink foods that are food and drinks for healthy people, which also have medicinal uses, like chicken soup or tea or something like that, but not things that are specifically for medicinal use. So the Mishnah mentions over there, So the Mishnah says, most people, so you have a type of oil called rose oil, which most people, the Tanakhama says in the Mishnah, are not allowed to smear that on their skin on Shabbos. But the Mishnah says, B'nei Melachim, Sochan, Agali, Makaseim, Shemin, Vered. Princes are allowed to, if they have a wound, they're allowed to smear rose oil on it on Shabbos. Shekain Daukan, Shabbanei Melachim, Losuk Bechoil, because princes do that kind of thing regularly, even on weekdays, whether, in other words, it's not something specifically medicinal for them. For them, it's a normal treatment. And Rav Shimon, I'm a Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim. And Rav Shimon says, again, that all Jews are B'nei Melachim, and therefore, if it's allowed for B'nei Melachim, then it has to be allowed for all Jews. Next, Rav Yishmael Rav Akiva, Titania, and we learn in a Braisa, Harishah, you notion by Elech Mon. Suppose a person owes 1,000 mon, which is an enormous amount of money. A money is a hundred zuz. A minimum wage laborer might get 4 zuz a day, the Gemara mentions in some other places. So you're talking, so 1 money alone would be around a month's pay for a worker. And here you're talking 100 times that. Anyway, the lavush itzalabas kuf money. Now he's wearing a garment, an itzala as a type of cloak or something that's worth 100 money. We make him take it off and sell it, and instead Beistin will arrange for him to go buy out of the proceeds an appropriate cloak for him. In other words, there's a concept in halacha, it's discussed in Bava Metzia in particular, it's discussed here and there and a few other places, there's a concept called misadrin labal choyim. When a person is in debt and he has to pay it off, Beistin will make arrangements for him to have a certain minimum amount of food and clothing and tools for his panosa and things like that. And those are safe from being taken by the creditors, and then everything else is taken and sold under Beistin's supervision to pay off his debts. So here we're saying he does need an itzel after all, but he doesn't need one that's worth 100 mana. So we'll sell it, and then we'll take a small amount of that money and buy him an itzel that's appropriate to his station. But Tana Bishuma Bishmal, the Tana Bishuma Rabbi Akiva, but then we learn in a braisa in the name of Rabbi Shmal and in the name of Rabbi Akiva, Ko Yisrael Ru'in Ma'isa Itzela, all Jews deserve to wear such a garment, so therefore they would say that even though the garment is worth 100 and you could use it to help pay off the debts, you can't take that away from him the same way as you wouldn't take if he had a lesser Itzela that's appropriate to his station, because no matter how expensive the Itzela is, no matter what, he's always B'nai Malachim and you can't touch it. At the end of the Perek, the Mishnah talks about that dinim about assisting in childbirth on Shabbos, childbirth being a matter of pikuach nefesh. So in general, you're allowed to do whatever it takes to whatever it takes on Shabbos. So in the Gemara goes into various details about that. And one of the things it says, which begins over here in Ein Yaakov, Omer of Yehuda Mishmul, Oisin Medura Lachaya B'Shabbos, the Moshav Shomim. You're allowed to make a bonfire to warm up a woman who's just given birth. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos during the cold season. So, Sovim Yina Lachaya Ein Lachololoi. First of all, when the Chachamim heard that din that Rabbi Yehuda said, they thought it meant only for a woman who just gave birth, but Lachololoi, but not necessarily for a person who's sick. You wouldn't have that heter to do that on Shabbos. And the Moshav Shomim Ein the Moshav Shomim, and only in the winter, not in the summer. Because in the summer you shouldn't need that. But the lohi, but the Gemara says that's not so. That assumption was incorrect. Loishna choya v'loishna choya doesn't matter a woman who just gave birth or any other kind of sick person. We're talking about choya sheyesh b'sakana. Loishna b'meisach shomim v'loishna b'meisach hama doesn't matter whether in the winter or in the summer. Either way, if that's what it takes to that they don't get sicker, then you're allowed to build them a bonfire on Shabbos for them to warm up. And we know this mid itmar. We know this because there was said, Omer Abchiba Ovin, Omer Shmuel, and this is in the same in the name of the same Shmuel as Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of. So we see that when Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda that you can make a Lachoya B'Shabbos B'Moshav Shomim, he didn't only mean that. In fact, he meant other similar cases as well, because Abchiba Ovin says in the name of Shmuel, Hikiz Dam, if a person had blood let, and Rashi says that's even less than a choyla, so how much more so a choyla than this din would apply to. So if a person let blood, then it's standing, and now he's cold because he lost the blood, then you can make a bonfire to warm him up, even in Tekufas Tammuz, even at the height of the summer. And obviously we're talking on Shabbos, because on weekdays there'd be no need for a heter for that. So therefore we see that Shmuel is talking about not just a woman who gave birth, but also a choyla, because if he allows it even for somebody who let blood, how much more so for a choyla, whose condition is more serious? And if he only allows it in Tekufas Tammuz, so not even only in the winter season. So so now the Gemara is going to talk further about this whole matter of letting blood and various things about it. So the Gemara says, Shmuel socholei tachtaka deshoga. One time, Shmuel, after we had blood let, they couldn't find firewood available to make a bonfire for him, and they needed to, so they broke up for him. Socholei means they broke up, they chopped up. Tachtaka, a chair, deshoga, made out of sugar wood, which is, Rashi translates it over here as tidhar. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that mentions a bunch of different kinds of trees. Rashi defines it over there. Rashi translates it into French over there as a fruit tree. So it's a very expensive kind of wood, but nevertheless, they did that because it was more important to be able to make a fire to warm them up. Similarly, Rav Yehuda tsochalek soda de yon. Rabbi Yehuda was once in the same situation as well, and for him they broke up for the firewood a table made of yoin. So it's some kind of cedar, some kind of thing in the cedar family. Rashi brings from his Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaLevi, that translates it as boxwood. Again, it's not the kind of wood that you would use, that you would normally use for firewood, and certainly not if it was an expensive table, but that was what they had to do. Similarly, for Rabba, one time in such a situation, they broke up for him a bench. So, by the way, the Gemara mentions in other places that Rabba was quite poor. So you can imagine there probably wasn't a lot of furniture around his house. So if they had to even break up a bench, Mela with Rav Yehuda and Mela with Shmuel and Rav Yehuda, we don't know particularly how they were financially. So they may have been able to afford the loss. Rabba Pashkas couldn't. So anyway, so Abaya asked him, "Vahaka over ma'amishum bal Pashkas? Aren't we being over on bal Pashkas over here by breaking up a good piece of furniture?" Omalei, so he answers, Bal Tashkas Dugufoi Odifli. The Bal Tashkas of my body is more important to me. It's more important if he lets blood and doesn't have a fire made, then the cold could cause him to become sick. So therefore that outweighs any concerns about Tashkas about the bench. And that is the din. You know, you have your Bal Tashkas is important, but other considerations can override. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Lo'olam Yimkar Adam Kores Beisai, a person should always sell, even if necessary, the beams of his house, V'yikach Min Olam L'Raglav, and buy shoes for himself. And now, on the other hand, if he lets blood and he doesn't have what to eat afterwards, because not only do you need to be warm, you also need to have food afterwards. Just like nowadays, when you give blood, they always have mezonos and orange juice over there. So if you don't have yunkum and olam shabernaglov, the yaspman sochis soda, then he should even sell the shoes. As important as shoes are, but having a meal after bloodletting is even more important. So he should sell his shoes if necessary and use them to buy the basics for his meal. So Rashi explains the first part, that he should sell even the beams of his house to get shoes. Rashi explains it has nothing directly to do with the health matters we're talking about over here. It's just because there's a tremendous bizoyan, a person who walks barefoot in the street, and therefore it's important for him to have shoes. We're actually going to have something toward the end of the Masechta along those lines, where one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Percha, is walking around barefoot because he couldn't afford shoes, and a goy, a min over there, or whatever, makes fun of him. So we see you shouldn't do that. On the other hand, as important as it is to avoid that bizoyan, it's more important for a person's health to eat something after blood. Marsha learns differently. Marsha says that no, both of them have to do with being cold. A person doesn't have shoes, then he's going to get cold if he's walking on the bare ground. Thus, we find, for example, in connection with the halachas of Yom Kippur, that even though you're not allowed to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, but a woman during the 30 days after she gave birth is allowed to. So by the same token, we're saying over here, as much as a person needs a roof over his head, it's more important to have shoes on his feet because the cold that he'd get, the chill he'd get in his body from not wearing shoes outweighs the fact that he's going to get overheated by not having a roof to protect him from the sun. But then, on the other hand, the chill that he could get from bloodletting and then not eating afterwards is even worse, and therefore for that it's worth selling his shoes. So, my tzorchei soda, what do we mean by the needs for the meal? What should he be eating after bloodletting? Rav Amar Basar, Shmuel Amar Yayin. So Rav says you should be eating meat, Shmuel says wine. Rav Amar Basar, because it's a nafsha cholof nafsha. You want to have a soul to replace the soul. Ki hadam hu hanefesh, like the pasuk says, the blood is the soul, is the life force of an animal or a person. So now that he had blood removed from his body, which is chayus from his body, so he needs to make up for it with the life of an animal, with meat from an animal. Shmuel says he should drink wine because the red of the wine will make up for the red blood that was removed. So the Gemara continues, Simen Shenimsar, this is a simen for the initials or sort of initials, whatever, the key letters of the names of five Amiroyim, where the Gemara is going to describe now what they would do after they did bloodletting. You have to realize, by the way, bloodletting then was a fairly common procedure. It was accepted medical knowledge in those times that you need to let blood every so often, and that way you'll stay healthy. The Gemara, in fact, as you mentioned further on, that until a person reaches 40 years old, he should be doing bloodletting every month, Shmuel's going to say at the bottom of the Amud. Leeches and cupping was more if a person was sick, I guess. Here it would be, I mean, I suppose they could use that method, but whatever, it involves making an incision in the skin and drawing blood out using a tube. Nowadays there are certain rare medical conditions that require it, but in those times it was considered to be a cure-all for a lot of different diseases. I suppose it could have been maybe had a lot of people. For example, a person has high blood pressure, I suppose it could help to some extent with that. Whatever. Anyway. So therefore. The body eventually makes new blood, yeah. But that's why Shmuel says further on that you have to do it during the early part of your life. You'd have to do it once a month and then later on less so. Yeah. Okay. So Shmuel b'yoma d'ovid milsa, a Shmuel on the day that he did the thing, meaning that he had blood left, they would prepare him in his house a dish of spleen, and for him to eat that after the bloodletting. The spleen is an organ in the body, and in particular, the job within the body is it breaks down and recycles red blood cells, so it's very rich in iron, and therefore, I guess Shmuel figured, because of that, it's good to have after bloodletting, because you need to replenish the iron that you lost. I don't think you can go into the average store and buy a spleen, but I suppose maybe in a specialty, I don't know, I mean, I suppose the kosher butcher shops or the kosher butchers, you know, agri-processors or whatever, I suppose they have to do something with that part, so I don't know, maybe you could buy it, I have no idea. Anyway, the fact is, by the way, it is actually one of the organs in the body where there's parts of it that have to be removed, you have to do nikkur on it in order to be allowed to eat it. You have certain blood vessels and certain veins of fat that have to be pulled off of it. There's a whole layer of fat on one end of it. So that may be also a reason why they don't sell it much nowadays, because it'd be hard to repair again. Right. Anyway. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Shossi Adnothic Tihi Mi'une. Rabbi Yochanan would drink so much wine, he held like Rab, that you said, he held like Shmuel, rather, that you're supposed to drink wine. So he would drink so much that you could smell the smell of the wine from his ears. And it might be a little bit of a guzma, but it might mean literally that, yeah. Anyway, Rav Nachman, so this is the simon that we have over here. We have the shin stands for Shmuel, the nun stands for the nun of Yochanan, the mem stands for the mem of Nachman, and so forth. But a lot of times the Gemara will do that, by the way, and it's simonim. It doesn't always use the first letter. Sometimes it uses like the most noticeable letter in the name. What? Something unique or like the most noticeably pronounced letter in the name or whatever, yeah. Anyway. Rav Nachman Shossi ad the coffee tachle. Rav Nachman would also drink wine. He would drink so much that his own spleen would be floating in wine. Rav Yosef Shossi ad the nafik mirivja de kusilta. Rav Yosef, after he had bloodletting done, would drink so much wine until it would be oozing out from the puncture that they made to do the bloodletting. By the way, the Gemara tells us, we learned at the end of Brachas, it's also at the end of Hodias, that Reb Yosef went through a period of 22 years where it says, where bloodletter never came to his house. So it says at the end of Brachas and at the end of Hodias that they needed a new Rosh Yeshiva. The question that came down to between Rabbah and Reb Yosef. They offered the job to Reb Yosef, but he turned it down in favor of Rabbah. Then the Gemara says, for the next 22 years, he never had a bloodletter in his house. And there's a number of different explanations of what that means. Some say he did need bloodletting done, but he would have it done in Rabbah's house because the whole time they were learning Torah. Another possibility is he didn't want to make the guy come to him because that would be showing like a little bit of a mastery over him. Instead, he would go to the doctor. But then there was also an explanation that it means that in Schusa, that he gave up the job of Rosh Hashiva, then Hashem made it that for the next 22 years, he was so healthy, he didn't even need a bloodletter. So if so, then this would have been before or after that. Anyway, Rava Mahadur Achamra Basklosa Tarfi, Rava, when he had bloodletting done, he would make sure to get wine that was 3 leaves old, meaning Rashi explains that it came from a grapevine which has been growing for at least 3 years, because every year the grapevine sheds its leaves and then grows new ones. So when you have the vine as had 3 sets of leaves on it, then you know the wine from it is good quality. The Pashtos, I mean, you have the matter of Orla anyway. You can't drink wine from a grapevine that's less than 3 years old anyhow. So the Pashtos mean after the years of Orla, then it additionally went through another 3 years. He was another one. Rav Nachman Yitzchak used to say to his Talmidim, the members of his yeshiva, the Matusa Minaychu, I beg of you, the Yoma Dehakoza, on a day when you have bloodletting done, imru levei seichu Nachman ikol legabon. You should tell your wives that Nachman, meaning me, the Rosh Hashiva, is going to be visiting. Now, if your Rosh Hashiva is visiting your house, of course, you're going to make a huge suda in his honor. So therefore, in other words, that would be a way of like getting your wives to make a huge suda for you after you have blood let, because you need it for your health. Even though, of course, I'm not going to actually be visiting, but this way that'll motivate them to make a nice big suda. And the Gemara continues, V'chulu i'arumi astiri bar mehai omer deshori. In fact, any other kind of tricking, of tricking merchants is also with the exception of the following one that the Gemara is going to describe, the shori, where that one is allowed. What it is manda ovid milsa, if a person has had blood let, beloy etchalei, and he can't afford the meat or the wine or whatever it is that he needs, particularly the wine that he needs for afterwards. So Lishko Zuza Mocha, what he should do is he should take a worn out Zuzga. So this is so worn out that nobody is going to want to accept it. It would be like the equivalent nowadays of like a really badly crumpled and ripped up dollar bill or something. The Lazel Leshev Hanusa. Then what he does is he goes one after another to 7 different stores where they sell wine. Now when you go to this kind of place where you buy wine, they normally let you have a taste of it first so you can see if the wine is good quality and you want to buy it. So what happens? You come into the store, you say, I'd like to buy a zuz worth of your wine. Let me have a taste of it. So the guy gives you a taste. Then you say, okay, I'd like to buy it. Here's the zuz. And the storekeeper is going to say, I don't want that zuz. I would never be able to spend it. Nobody's going to accept it. But then at least you've drunk some wine. Then you repeat the thing in the next store and the next one after that until you've been in 7 different stores and you've drunk enough wine to be able to restore your health after bloodletting. So again, normally it would be also to do that. But in this kind of case, then the Gemara is saying it's allowed. Ad the time, Shir Revi'isa, until by the time he's gone, between this and a whole bunch of different stores, he'll have ended up drinking a full Revi'is, and that'll be enough to restore his strength.
He didn't pay a penny,
man, right. The Eloi, now if not, what if he doesn't even have the worn out Zuz? Leichel Shev Tamri Uchamta, then let him eat 7 black dates. Now, particularly, this is the Gemara as written in Bavel. The Gemara mentions in some other places, dates were very, very plentiful and cheap in Bavel. So even this person who barely has any money, perhaps he can still afford to be able to get some dates. The Lishuf Mishcha B'tzidei, then he should rub oil on his temples, on the sides of his head. The Nigne B'shimsha, and he should sleep out in the sun. And between all those things, that'll help provide enough warmth in his body that he'll be able, that'll overcome the effects of the bloodletting. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Avlet, Ashkeche v'Shmuel d'Goni b'Shimsha. Avlet was a famous Goyish astrologer and scientist and whatever of those times. He was a friend of Shmuel. We'll have him again at the very end of the Masechta. We'll have him as well. Anyway, he one time saw Shmuel sleeping outside in the sun. Omalei says, Hakima di Yehudoi, you wise man of the Jews, Bisha mihavatov, how can what's bad for you be what's good be good for you? Listen, too much sun is bad for you. What makes you think it's good for you that you're sleeping out in it? Omalei, yoimadakozahu, so Shmuel tells him, because I just had bloodlet today and therefore I need the extra warmth. But the loyhi, the Gemara says, actually that wasn't so. Shmuel had not in fact had bloodletting done that day. There is a particular day of the year when the sun is really good for you, and that is Yom HaDenoflev Tkufas Tammuz, the day on which Tkufas Tammuz comes out. On the bottom of it here it says, a different view says Tkufas Tevis, the day of the winter solstice. Anyway, the Sava, but Shmuel decided, Loi Igli Lei, I don't want to inform Avlet of that, because in general, you don't want to give advice to people, to Umas HaOlam, especially Ovd Avodah Zarah, as this Avlet was, that will help them out. We find in a different Gemara, for example, that Daniel gave advice to Nebuchadnezzar how to evade a punishment in Hashemayim, and later on Daniel suffered consequences for it. So by the same token, Shmuel didn't want to tell Avlet this secret.
The time was
to do
from
expression
of the sense, because you need to heat in the sun to get the vitamin D and everything else.
Yeah, so. Cold sun. Yeah, and well, even a cold sun will still give you vitamin D as well. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel da Amitavayu. Now in this connection, Rav and Shmuel both say, Kol ha-meikol b'sudas ha-kozas dam, if a person is careless with the meal after bloodletting, mekilomim is a nois of min ha-shemayim. And then Hashem makes it that Hashem says that we'll be careless, so to speak, with his mizonos, that he doesn't necessarily need to have such parnosa. But I mean, because the Beis Din Shamayla says, He didn't even care about his own life. Should I, Hashem, be concerned for him? No. So therefore, if he loses his parnasa, it's his own fault. Hashem protects the fool, but that's the Gemara is going to mention that point later. But still, he still has to make the effort. So the Gemara continues. Rav and Shmuel da'amu tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel also say another point. High man to Ovid Milsa, a person has bloodlet, loy leisiv hechid the korich zika. He shouldn't sit in a place where it's windy. Rashi explains, particularly, you mean, for example, that he stays, let's say, for example, in a hallway where there are lots of windows. So therefore, like you have it, it's like a wind tunnel effect, like the wind blows around inside there. Dilma Shofi Le Umna, because what might have happened when the doctor had let the blood, he might have taken out so much of his blood, Umukim Le Arabi Isa, where he had left him with only a revius of blood. Throughout Shas, there's a concept that a revius of blood is the minimum needed to sustain life. It's a little hard to understand in modern terms. I mean, if a person has lost that much blood, they'd go into shock. But the Gemara takes it as a given throughout Shas that a revius is the minimum amount of blood that can be in a person, and that will be enough to sustain him. Maybe it means only a revius of red blood cells. Who knows? Anyway, whatever the case. So it might be that the doctor has removed everything but that last revius. But Osi Zika, so now the wind is going to come, the Shoif Minei, and it's going to blow out a little bit of the blood that's left in his body. But Osi Zidei Sakona, and then the guy's going to be in danger because he doesn't have enough blood. So therefore, you shouldn't sit in a windy place. The Gemara continues in this connection. Shmuel have a rogov of Ovid Milsa, the base of the Shev Levain of Archa. Shmuel used to regularly have his bloodletting done in a building where the walls were made out of 7 bricks and a half brick. The Gemara explains, Rashi brings over here, based on other Gemaras, that a brick in those times was 3 tefachim. So therefore, 7 bricks equals 21 tefachim, and another half brick is a tefach and a half. So the walls were 22 and a half tefachim thick, which is close to 4 amos. So you're talking about 6 or 7 feet thick, to prevent any wind from coming in. At one time he had the bloodletting done by Irish Benafshe, and he felt weaker than normal. Bodak, so he checked into it, Chad Urcha, and he found in one place in the wall, 1 half brick was missing. So that made all the difference, that made that now enough outside air was able to get in, that caused him to be weaker than normal. The Gemara continues, another thing, Rabu Shmuel Dami Tavayu, Haiman de Ovid Milsa, when a person has had blood left, first he should taste something, but only then he should go outdoors. If he doesn't eat something before going outdoors, that's the bloodletting, then what happens, it depends what he first meets. If the first thing he sees is a dead person, the result is his face is going to become green or yellow. If he meets up first with somebody who killed somebody, then he himself is going to die. And if the first thing he meets up with is a dover achar, a pig, kosher, a dover achar, then it's bad for him. It makes him that he's more susceptible to the other kind of dover achar, namely tzaras. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that out of the 10 measures of tzaras that Hashem put in the world, pigs have 9 of them. So therefore, now when he meets up with that, then he's susceptible to that. Rav and Shmuel Dami Tavayu, and Rav and Shmuel say another thing in this connection. Haiman de Ovid Milsa, when a person has had blood left, Lishi Puta Vahadur Lokum, he should wait a little bit and only then get up. Not get up the moment he's finished with it. To Omamar, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Hei Dvorim, craving the Mister Yosem and Achaim. There are 5 things that if a person does them, he's closer to death than to life. In other words, these are things that can easily kill a person from the shock. The Elohim, Ochav Omar, a person eats and right away stands up. Shosav Omar, or if he drinks and right away stands up. Yoshin Omar, if he sleeps and then right away gets up without taking the time to wake up properly first, that is. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that as soon as you wake up, you should realize the Eivishta is standing over you and get up quickly. But still, we see from this that there should still be a little break in between. The Pasha is you sit on the bed first and you say Modani and then you get up. Anyway, the hik is dam ba'omad. The 4th one is bloodletting and then standing up right away. And the 5th one is shimish mitasi ba'omad, is having relations and standing up right away. So all of those are bad for a person's health, and therefore we're saying that a person shouldn't do them. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Yud, what is today? Yud Aleph 7. The Rebbe talked about that the avodah to bring Mashiach to Kenev, Poyol Mamash, so you have the Pashtus, that means by adding in Torah and Mitzvahs, in Limud HaTorah, that means both in Migla and in Pimius HaTorah, and doing Mitzvahs behavior, and that means especially the Sicha was on Parshas Shemini, shortly after Pesach, so keeping the Minna, because the Alter Rebbe writes in the Siddur, to learn Perkei Avos after Mincha and Shabbos, first between Pesach and Shavuos, and then continuing throughout the rest of the seven. So that helps bring Mashiach. Continuing on Hilchos Maso Matan, we talked about yesterday that you have to make sure to weigh and measure honestly. So you also have a din in that connection that you also have to have, now the pasuk says you shouldn't have in your pocket different size weights, you shouldn't have in your house different kinds of different size weights. So Chazal explained that it means lo yilecha b'kischa, a person won't have in his pocket money if he has evan v'evan. He won't have the beischa, he won't have his needs because eifa v'eifa. Instead, if a person has honest weights and measures, then yilecha, then I'll have a lot. Rashi brings it on the pasuk. Also, Chazal say that what should a person do in the Gemara in Nida, where the Anshe Alexandria asked Rabbi Yeshua a bunch of questions. One of them was, what should a person do to become rich? And the answer was, Yisav Yitzid Memun, he should do business honestly, and daven for Rachman, for Hashem, to whom all wealth belongs. Liya Kesef, Liya Zahav. The Gemara explains that they actually need both. You can't have one without the other. You can't say, I'll do business honestly, but not daven to Hashem. And you can't do the other way around either. I'll daven, I'll be a frum guy and daven, but not, yeah.
A crooked business.
Yes. No, Hanani Menachem.